I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate. In 1918, on a battlefield in Europe, an American soldier rescued a German shepherd and her young pups, who were still blind and nearly bald. One of them would end up becoming Rin Tin Tin, an American movie star who helped build the Warner Brothers studios. But Rin Tin Tin quickly became more than just a single dog. Joining me now to explain how Rin Tin Tin, or Rinty, became an American icon is New Yorker staff writer Susan Orlean. Her book, Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend, is published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm pleased that it brings her back to the show today. Welcome.
Very happy to be here. Thanks.
So this is a story about a dog, but it's also a story about the man who found him. Tell us about Lee Duncan. Who was he?
Lee Duncan was born at the very end of the 1800s. He was a California kid whose mother was abandoned by her husband. It was a tough time. She couldn't manage her children. She put her two kids in an orphanage without any idea of whether she would ever be able to come back and reclaim them. So Lee grew up for the formative years of his childhood in an orphanage. I think that's essential to the story because he was somebody who had a loneliness that seemed to only be filled by animals. He had several pets as a kid, many of whom were taken from him for various reasons.
The story about his grandfather and a lamb that he loved was very disturbing.
Yes, his first pet was a lamb. The lamb, as lambs will do, ate some roses off his grandfather's rose bush, and his grandfather was furious and had the lamb slaughtered. His connection then with animals was something really deep, really intense. When he was in the war, in World War I, you would think that the idea of finding a dog would be far from your mind. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of dogs that participated in World War I. In many capacities, and that is how Rinty came to be born on that battlefield.
Well, that was going to be a question because we don't, in these days, think of animals on a battlefield unless they've wandered into the wrong place. So what was Rintintin's mother doing there?
Dogs served in almost every capacity in World War I and World War II as well. In fact, dogs did parachute jumps, which is really one of the more alarming images, if you can conjure this. One of the reports that I read from the Department of Defense, that one particular dog did 13 jumps, 12 successfully.
The first 12.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So dogs worked as messengers, as sentries, as guards, as they distributed cigarettes among the troops. They went through battlefields after the fighting ended to find and identify the soldiers who were still alive so medics could race to those soldiers and try to help them. And in one of the more touching realizations that I came across in the book, the dogs wandered through the battlefield, coming up to each soldier so that if the soldier was dying, the soldier could embrace the dog and have some comfort. Really touched me to read this and also to be reminded of the essential bond between people and dogs, which could give you comfort at a moment like that.
So when Lee Duncan comes upon these very young pups, what happens next?
I would think a lot of soldiers would say, we're in the middle of the war. This is the way it goes. Good luck, and leave the dogs behind. And I should say also, this was a German war kennel. This was a German female dog who had just given birth. So and the Germans used thousands and thousands of dogs. So this was not an unusual discovery. Lee, though, being a person who loved dogs, could not walk away from this litter of newborn puppies. He brought the mother and the pups back to his barracks. He spent the rest of the war doing everything he could to nurture them and keep them alive. He kept the two puppies of the litter and found other soldiers to take the other dogs. Of course, luck and fame being what it is, we don't know what happened to those other dogs, but we certainly do know what happened to the two he kept, who he named Rin Tin Tin and Nanette.
You write that he actually had high hopes for Nanette at the beginning.
He thought Nanette was the smarter dog, the, you know, more responsive to training. She was the dog who he thought would be the star. That original Nanette, though, died after Lee came back to the U.S. He came through a delousing and debriefing camp in Long Island. Nanette developed what was probably distemper and died. He got another female then, not Rinty's sister, because she was the original Nanette, but another female German Shepherd, who he also named Nanette in honor of the pup who had died. She appeared in some of the films with Rin Tin Tin, but his attentions then turned to Rinty, who, even though he was second best in Lee's initial assessment, turned out, of course, to be a pretty good bet.
So here's this guy who grew up in very rough circumstances in an orphanage and then on his grandfather's farm or ranch. He was in a war. Where did he get the idea for a dog who might be able to perform?
It is a weird thought to us now. I don't think most people look at their dog and think, I think this could be an international star. What you have to appreciate is that at that time, dogs were stars. There was already a German Shepherd star who was breaking box office records. His name was Strongheart. He was the first German Shepherd to appear as a big star, basically the lead in a movie, and he was a huge sensation. So Lee was already inspired by that. Bear in mind also that these were silent films. When you see a silent film, it dawns on you for the first time, as it did me, that dogs and people are kind of on a level playing field.
Actually, dogs may have the advantage.
Oh, I think they do have an advantage. They seem much more natural performing without speaking. People in a silent film, there's always this artifice because we know that people speak. So the fact that we can't hear them is strange, whereas with the dog, simply conveying action and expression in their face is natural. So dogs fit into the world of silent film very easily. Lee lived in Los Angeles. Hollywood was a new industry. Rin Tin Tin had proved himself to be extremely athletic. A little clip of him jumping a nearly 12-foot fence in a dog show had made it into a newsreel. Lee got a check in the mail for that appearance, and I think those things came together in his mind, and he suddenly thought, I now know what I want to do with myself.
I'm speaking with Susan Orlean, whose new book is Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend. It's from Simon & Schuster. There was a lot of planning involved, but there also seemed to be a lot of luck involved in Rin Tin Tin's ascension to these incredible heights.
There were times when the serendipity of this whole story kind of raised the hair on my neck. It was almost eerie how many times things could have gone the other way. And that's part of, I think, what makes the story so emotional, is the chance to look back and see all those moments. First of all, the puppy could have been born and left and died on that battlefield. He could have been found by a soldier who wouldn't have taken the care of the dogs. Lee had a lot of trouble bringing the dogs back to the U.S., but he persevered and through a certain amount of luck got them back. Being filmed by a friend who was testing a camera, that film clip ended up in a newsreel, total accident and luck. Knocking on every door in Hollywood, which Lee then did, but along with a lot of other people who also thought that they had a great German Shepherd. Why this one? Happened that Lee was knocking on the door at Warner Brothers, supposedly. Some of this is legend and not life, but the story was that Harry Warner was filming a movie that had a wolf as one of the characters, and he was using a real wolf. The real wolf was not cooperating. Lee had somehow managed to get on the set. We don't know exactly how. And he said, he took some dirt, rubbed it in Rinty's fur, and said, "My dog can play a wolf." And as luck would have it, Harry Warner said, "Fine, get rid of that wolf. Let's try the dog." And Rinty performed perfectly. Lo and behold, history was made. So, yes, there was this feeling, and I think it was almost haunting to me, some of those, even in my reporting, some of the moments that could have so easily gone the other way. It made me appreciate that life sometimes does feel like a series of happy accidents.
As you tell the story, I mean, we begin in Lee's childhood and we see him with his grandfather who won't even let him touch the dogs because they're workers. And you're talking here also about dogs being workers on the battlefields in World War I. How did Rin Tin Tin play a part in the way that our own sort of relationship with dogs changed in this country?
I think he was both symbolic of that change, but influenced it. Certainly, when he appeared in film in the 20s, he set off a craze for German Shepherds. There's no question that the breed, which was only developed in the late 1800s, strange to us to realize because it seems like they've been around forever. They're actually a relatively new breed of dog.
And was there a particular trait that they were bred for? Was there something that the person who created them created? Sounds like such a strange
I know,
word, but in
they,
a sense that's what it was.
Yeah, they were developed. They were developed to be very smart, but more importantly, to have a particular capacity for bonding with people. That is what the man who developed the breed wanted to accomplish. And he succeeded. I mean, that's why the dogs were so effective working for us as soldiers, as guide dogs, search and rescue, because they had that connection with people that was being sought in the breed.
And so was that a piece of this change in our own relationship with dogs, too, is that here's this breed that was created to do exactly what we now hope our dogs will do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the idea of dogs as being inspirational, as an emotional part of our lives, was something that was fairly new in the 20s. Dogs had been on farms. They had worked. Most dogs at that point lived outside. It was unusual to have a dog living in your house. If you talk to anybody who grew up on a farm or a ranch, they had a lot of dogs, but the dogs were outside along with the rest of the animals. There was this quite a leap to suddenly see dogs as more part of your family and less part of your livestock. And that really began happening in the 1920s. I think Rin Tin Tin, because it was suddenly the symbol of something admirable and aspirational, made us move in that direction towards our relationship with dogs, which is they were our friends. They were important to us, and they weren't just another piece of farm equipment.
We have about 30 seconds, but I know you are very passionate about animals yourself. Did doing this research and writing about Rin Tin Tin change your relationship with the animals that you live with?
It made me appreciate how animals are so present in our lives, whether it's because you have pets, which the number of pets in this world of ours is mind-boggling, but also that they affect, you know, food. They are an enormous part of what our lives are all about. It made me appreciate and also be a little, for the first time, I think, it made me sit back and think we coexist with this. It's like coexisting with Martians, these amazing, very different life forms. and the ones like dogs that we've developed this close connection to, that's something pretty amazing and pretty fascinating, whether you love dogs or not.
I've been speaking with Susan Orlean about her book Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and she'll be speaking and introducing a screening of Clash of the Wolves, starring Rin Tin Tin, tonight at 6 at the Film Society of Lincoln Center as part of the New York Film Festival.